Move on to the fifth case of the day, which is Gupta versus the Board of Regents of the University of Wisconsin. Mr. Lasker.
Thank you, Judge Evans. May it please the court, I am David Lasker here for the plaintiff appellant, Milind Gupta, a man who was a very successful scholar and academician at the University of Tennessee and who came to Wisconsin to follow his wife here when she got a job at the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. And he sought and got himself a job at the University of Wisconsin in Madison as a professor. His experience after he began working at the University of Wisconsin was to go from the great success that he had been to being somebody who appeared to be stumbling and be incompetent because he was maliciously tripped and hobbled by the actions of Professor Hunt and Dean Dothit in a manner that was designed to cover up that fact. Literally, the defendants made it impossible for him to have a favorable witness from Wisconsin regarding matters that were testified to by the defendants and also were testified to by Professor DeLong of Tennessee, the witness that the district judge did not allow to appear at the trial. Professor Gupta was denied a proper tenure clock in two ways. The extension of the tenure clock that was intended both by Dean McCubbin and by the peer review committee in the first year was scuttled by the malicious actions of Professor Hunt and those that were working with him. And secondly, the 75%, 25% appointment to the Madison campus and the Milwaukee campus, which by rule would have meant an automatic extension of the tenure clock to 6 years, was obliterated by the falsehoods of Professor Hunt and Dean Dothit. And he was also falsely cast as a spousal hire, which never was true. In any event, because of the actions regarding the clock, tenure was impossible, with no extension of the tenure clock, and Professor Hunt's actions on blunting class buyouts, on refusing to allow Tennessee and Milwaukee teaching to count toward tenure, his undermining of the scholarship of Professor Gupta, and his threats and intimidations with racial comments were such that no reasonable person could have succeeded in Dr. Gupta's circumstances. Now, the question really is whether the testimony of Professor DeLong that we wanted to use as the only person who knew Dr. Gupta well and would be able to give testimony that conflicted with the defendant's testimony. The testimony of Professor DeLong showed the plaintiff to be completely different than he was characterized to be by the defendants and their witnesses. Indeed, showed him to be very well qualified over a period of many years, 6 years, at Tennessee as a scholar, as a teacher, to be much loved and appreciated and revered. And there were lots of affirmative documents in evidence in the trial that were consistent with Dr. Gupta's testimony about that and Professor DeLong's testimony about that, but the jury didn't even look at those documents.
I think it is troubling that the testimony from DeLong was kept out, but from this record, how are we to determine that that made a huge difference? That the committee would have taken a different view of this had they known about it? They didn't consider anything that happened in Tennessee.
Well, actually, the teaching and the scholarship at Tennessee was supposed to be considered as part of the basis for tenure.
Well, that's what got him hired in the first place.
That's right. Yes, you're right.
So there, it was before the board, that record.
Yes, and
so emphasizing it, how would emphasizing it make any difference in the ultimate decision that they didn't want him at University of Wisconsin?
Well, perhaps the jury would have looked at the evidence. They didn't even look at the documents that were before the decision makers at the time, which included a great deal of information about his teaching and scholarship at Tennessee. But without Professor DeLong's testimony, the jury was out an hour and 11 minutes. You could hardly do more than select a foreperson in that amount of time. Professor Gupta was really trying this case with his hands tied behind his back, and I'd like to get to your question more directly, Judge Evans. If he had had some testimony from somebody who was friendly and positive and supportive, just one person, would have made a tremendous difference in this trial. He was totally alone and made to look like a fool. And the opportunity was there for opposing counsel, and I would have used it too if I were in his situation, to tell the jury in the opening argument, you're never going to hear anybody say that this guy was any good other than the guy himself.
See, the problem is, or the concern that I see here is that maybe 8 out of 10 district judges would have allowed DeLong's testimony to be presented to the jury. And Judge Shabazz takes a more narrow view and decides he's going to try this case on a more narrow focus. But unless his view is so unreasonable and no other judge would look at the situation the way he did, it's hard to find an abuse of discretion.
Your Honor, pages 6 through 7 of my reply brief, I cite a number of cases from the circuit which stand for the proposition that a judge abuses his discretion when he bases his decision upon an erroneous view of the law. And really, Judge Shabazz's decision that this was irrelevant, totally irrelevant, was a decision of law that was erroneous. And so I think that the standard is met, and even if the standard were just a simple abuse of discretion, the fact of the matter is that the relevance of this testimony was so clear and so important, it was really just clear as a bell when the motion in limine was granted that this trial was probably going to be coming out in favor of the defendants. I'd like to reserve some time for rebuttal, if I may.
Sure.
Thank you.
Mr. Sweeney.
May it please the court. Counsel, my name is John Sweeney. I'm an assistant attorney general, and I was counsel for the Board of Regents and the defendants, both trial counsel and obviously here today. I'm not going to re-argue the merits of the case. There's one issue that has been appealed to this court, and that's whether or not the testimony of Professor DeLong should have been admitted by the district court judge. Judge Shabazz said pre-trial and during the course of the trial, this is new information. The decision makers at the University of Wisconsin didn't have Professor DeLong's opinion before them. Conceivably, Mr. Gupta could have gone out and got 20 people who came in and said, we think he's qualified. We could have gone out and got 100 people that said he wasn't. The decisions that were made at the University of Wisconsin, number one, whether the tenure clock should be extended. The vote was 17-0. Number two, whether this individual was entitled to tenure. The vote was 23-0. That's why there was nobody on the UW campus. Counsel is now asking the court to take a de novo review. In his initial brief, he said this is an abuse of discretion standard, and it is an abuse of discretion standard. The DeLong testimony was not considered by anyone at the University of Wisconsin. The fact that he taught at Tennessee, fine, that was considered. But what's to prevent anyone, as Judge Shabazz said, and I agree with him on this one, we could go out and get 50 people, they could go out and get 50, and let the jury sit as a super personnel department. That's not the standard that this court uses.
But realistically, if you're trying a case like this in front of a jury, and the jury's going to hear that you spent considerable time at a different
Tennessee school,
Tennessee in this case, wouldn't the jury want to know, you know, how did he do there? Wouldn't that be kind of a relevant consideration?
Well, the issue is, and you'll note it by the jury verdicts, there were two jury verdict questions. Were the decision makers, were they affected in any way by bias? It's not what Professor DeLong thought. It's not what any other doctor or lawyer or any of us think about his qualifications. There were two decisions made, tenure clock and tenure. And the issue for the jury is not whether they thought Gupta deserved tenure or an extension of the clock, not whether anyone else thought he deserved those appointments, but were the decision makers at the University of Wisconsin affected in any way by discrimination?
Well,
that's correct. No, because there were materials submitted, Judge Williams, regarding his performance at the University of Tennessee. That's correct. And also, as I'm sure this court is aware, during the tenure process, the applicant has the opportunity to submit anything he or she wishes to be considered. Judge Shabazz said, we're not now going to pile on additional qualifications. If there was information the decision makers should have been given, they should have been given it. And then this jury is to analyze, were the decision makers affected in any way by discrimination? Not whether the decision makers were right or wrong, because we could all sit here today and disagree whether Mr. Gupta deserved tenure or an extension of the clock. But the question that this court has always directed us to is, were the decision makers affected in any way by discrimination? Were the two decisions, extension of the tenure clock and an award of tenure, affected in any way by discrimination? Not did the University of Wisconsin decision makers make a mistake, or not whether there are other people out there who may disagree, but as you will note, and it's in our appendix at 185, the jury verdicts. Was discrimination involved in those decisions? And there's no tenure candidate that can come in 1, 2, 3 years after and say, here's additional information for the jury. The decision makers at the university didn't have it, but we think the jury can now find how qualified Mr. Gupta was because we have more information. That's Judge Shabazz's comment saying we're not having teacher of the year. That's his shorthand for saying the jury will consider the information that the decision makers at the university considered and nothing more. We're not going to pile on qualifications after the fact. The evidence, the testimony of this professor, DeLong, was not relevant. There was certainly no abuse of discretion, and even Mr. Gupta himself testified that unless he could remedy the tenure clock, he didn't think, even he didn't think, that he would be awarded tenure. I think Judge Shabazz was correct, and we ask that his decision be affirmed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Lasker. Got a couple of minutes.
Good. Thank you. Just a few short points. The entire reality that was in existence for those who were deciding about both the tenure clock issue and the granting of tenure was wholly engineered, truly manufactured by Professor Hunt.
Are you suggesting that you didn't have the opportunity to present any evidence at those hearings?
I'm sorry?
Before the board, did you have the opportunity to present matters to support your client?
I wasn't involved at that time.
Well,
my client was not present at the time that the tenure was being considered.
Was he able to offer material to them?
He did offer material.
And did he offer the material that you were discussing now?
Yes, indeed. And
it was before the board?
It was, however, one of the witnesses testified that he didn't supply the materials that he was asked to provide, and on the witness stand at trial, he admitted that, well, I guess it is there, we never even noticed it or saw it.
Well, that's not a part of discrimination. The material was there that he wanted them to consider.
It was there, and yes, it was, yeah. Your Honor. It just wasn't considered because
Is your attack on their failure to consider, or is it because they were not given the material to consider?
Their failure to consider because of how
so everything. That if a jury went back and came back with what you consider to be a sappy verdict, we would then be able to go to see whether they considered the material that was delivered to them.
Yes, we could consider the material that was delivered to the jury.
No, that they didn't consider the material.
No, I don't think so. I think a jury can do what it wants to do with the evidence, Your Honor.
Wouldn't you say that pretty much this is what the board does, acts as a jury?
Yes, but when the board has no incentive to look at the record because they are so prejudiced against this man because he's the wrong minority, and a plan has been successful to get rid of him, is the problem. You see, it's a Section 1983 action as a Title VII action. In the whole house of cards, if I may just complete this sentence, that the defendants built would have come crashing down if we could have had the testimony of Professor DeLong. Thank you very much.